Sairam, and welcome to all listeners to yet another episode of Afternoon Satsang. As always, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and I'm being joined by Arvind to host this segment of Afternoon Satsang. And if you are a regular listener of our show, you will know that we are right now in the middle of the Satyam Shivam Sundaram episode. We do two together. The last week we spoke about the royal family of Chincholi coming to Swami, and this week we are continuing the happenings of that year. We spoke how Swami spent the first month of, a few days of the first month of 1949 in Hyderabad with the family of Chincholi, and we are proceeding from there. But before we do that, let me begin by offering our most humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet, and also joining you all in welcoming Arvind. Sairam Arvind.
Sairam Prem. Sairam dear listeners, and it's such a wonderful opportunity to be here. I was just wondering, Prem, you know, every day in the world, so many things are happening and people are part of those happenings. Many things that people do, they may not exactly enjoy doing it, but they are forced to do it because either it's part of their duty, part of their job, or whatever. But in such a world, when all of us from all around the world are able to sit together and enjoy a satsang, you know, the beauty of a satsang is it's something that we enjoy doing because we benefit so much from it, and we also get to hear these stories of Swami, which can take us and transport us into a completely different world, away from our worries, away from everything. And then when we come back to the world after such a satsang, we definitely feel a lot lighter and brighter. So Swami says that it is just not possible for anyone to come to Swami without Swami's will. Well, I think extrapolating on that, it is true that it is not possible for anybody to read about Swami without His will, to hear about Swami without His will, and to discuss about and talk about Swami without His will. With that knowledge, I think all of us should be very grateful to Swami for this beautiful opportunity where Swami has willed that we spend this time in contemplation about Him, speaking about Him, listening about Him, and enjoying the beautiful nectarine juice of His leelas and mahimas.
Definitely, and very well put, because, you know, whenever we go through the stories of these people who came to Swami in those early years, you know, this is what would have really struck them. You know, could this really be possible? You know, all the description they heard about Swami and all the wondrous thing that they were even witnessing themselves, it would have always wonderstruck them that is this really happening? Are we really witnessing things like this? Because the kind of things which we are reading now, now it is easy, you know, when we look back and say that Swami said this and Swami said that you will get, you know, such and such a thing will happen in your life, or you know, this thing will be solved in these many months, and
the nation will get independent on this day.
Right, then, you know, now we look back at it and you know, we look at it in a matter of fact manner. You say, yeah, of course, you know, Swami can do it. But then, you know, the kind of thrill which would have been there when some of these things happened, maybe we are missing out a bit of it because of being so used to Swami.
There's another important lesson in this very observation that you made. The fact that when we are going through, when we are through the process of the avatar's life and message unfolding, we often do not realize what significance that event is or how grand it actually is. It just goes off as a matter of fact, because that was how life was in those days. Now we are in 1949, and the Rani of Chincholi and the other royal members at Chincholi, what we discussed last week, I'm sure none of them would have thought that so many years down the line, every king, every queen wants their kingdom and their lineage to be known and spoken about. I'm sure they didn't have the slightest idea of how grandly they would be spoken about. They would be spoken about as people who lived and breathed the same air as God, with whom God played, with whom they played, I mean, with those who played with God. I'm sure they would not even have imagined it. But it is a real privilege and blessing if Swami decides to confer even that during those stages. And I feel that is a blessing we should pine for, because every one of us, you know, we feel that, oh, you know, I came late to Swami. You know, when I joined in 1998, my classmates were speaking about telling, you know, you are so thrilled by Swami, this is nothing. You should have seen in the early 90s, yeah, you know, Swami is now changed. And then, you know, when we came to the 2003, 2004, when I was doing my undergraduate, at that time, I remember some of us who had been been the student of the institute for 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, telling the freshers that, you know, this is very nice, good, enjoy it, but you know, this is nothing. You should have seen the days. You know, 5 years back, it was so much. Swami used to do this, Swami used to do that. And that continued, you know. People would say that, hey, you know, when we were there, Swami used to walk. You should have seen, when Swami used to walk, it's different. Now days are gone. And so, you know, I just mentally thought, let me try to find out, when is that ideal time when, you know, they say, ah, this is the perfect time you should have come to Swami. Because everybody says that, hey, this is not the perfect time, you should have come just a little earlier, then it was grand. Can you guess what my findings would have been?
No, I'm eager to know first.
Yeah, the finding is, nobody is happy, man. I mean, I was so surprised, because you go to the people who used to say that, this is nothing, you know, before I came, people got the chance to garland Swami. Oh, before that, you know, they used to sleep around Swami's cot. It goes right up to childhood. But again there, once you reach one childhood point, at one particular point, before that people do not wish, because, you know, that time, they did, oh God, you know, these people, that is not a right time, because these people lived with Swami without knowing He is Swami. What is the use of that? I mean, you are not able to benefit because you are simply living. You don't know that it is the avatar in your midst. Which basically means that, how much ever you get of God, you're not going to be satisfied. And I think it is with a reason that has been put into us, that we should never get satisfied how much ever we get of God. We have to keep finding more and more. So while that is one message, the other message we should keep in mind is, it is never too late. Whenever Swami has willed, each one of us have come. So even if we have come to Swami just yesterday, it's a thing to celebrate, because we have got the call, and from now on we can pine and gather and live with Swami as per His timing and perfection.
Definitely. You know, a couple of days back, I was just hearing a drama which was being aired on Radio Sai on the Saint Surdas.
Mm.
He is given the vision of Lord Krishna.
Mm.
Imagine when Krishna was there on earth and Krishna was part of, you know, living in Vrindavan.
Mm.
Thousands would have seen Him.
Correct.
But would their thrill match the thrill of Surdas, who was a blind man who had the vision of Krishna, who appeared specially for Him?
Exactly.
And who gave Him vision and took it back just so that He could have the darshan. You know, that is what God can do, because when He wants to make you feel special, time and, you know, the place where it happens,
correct,
just doesn't matter. He
nothing
can just
matters.
Make you special. And that's what is special about Swami, because He's made people feel special over a huge variety of people have been made to feel special.
And people ranging from a huge geographical boundary, people varying in times, different times. I mean, it is only God who can do this, that a person who felt special in 1950, the same kind of special feeling can be aroused in a person when he came to Swami in 1995, and the same kind of special feeling can be aroused in a person when he has come, say, yesterday to Swami. That is the magic, and that is why Swami is our Lord. He can make us feel special anytime He wills. And therefore, there is no need for us to feel bad or repent that we are too late, we missed so much. Instead, let us see it positively and say, wow, Swami has done so much. There is so much to fill our lives with. We can every moment spend, and yet spend on listening and enjoying that glory, and yet we will not be complete by the end of our lives. Thank you, Swami, that you have left behind such a legacy in your physical sojourn. And I pine to get that special moment with you, and I know that when the time is right, you will give it to me.
So having said that and making those introductory remarks, let's go to the year 1949, and because that we can always still do. We can still travel back and forth, because the beauty of this avatar is allowed Himself to be documented, and He's given us the joy to ruminate over Him. And these are all not just mythological. You could talk about Rama and Krishna in the same way, but you could be discarded as, you know, talking about mythology, but this is even historical.
Yes.
You know, it's been documented, and date-wise, you know, we know that even now you can go to the temple in Gindi, what we're going to talk about, and having been to that place, and it still is vibrating with that presence of Swami. And I mean, I'm not just saying this off my, off my hat. You could go there, you can really feel the serenity, because it's right in the middle of the city.
Mm.
It's one of the most populated areas in the city of Chennai, but you can still go there and you can feel the peace and calm in that compound.
You know, Prem, this might be a slight digression, but before I forget, because it's such a profound thing, a thing that we take often for granted without realizing. You know, you said about Swami allowing himself to be documented.
Right.
You know, for my honeymoon, I had been to one place in the coastal Karnataka.
Mm-hmm.
And over there, I happened to come across a small Shirdi Baba temple in the resort.
Okay.
Sai Vishram was the resort. It was named after Sai. And yes, it has been built by a devotee. And so I came to know that every Thursday they have bhajans there.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to attend it. And you know, the kind of people who attended the bhajans, about 12 of them attended. And none of them had even the slightest singing skills. It was really, on the ear, it was sounding terrible. And I was wondering, oh my God, this is the kind of bhajans they do. And all of them had cymbals in their hand. Nobody's clapping, everybody's clanging on the cymbals, and the cymbals' volume overpowers the singing. So I was wondering what is happening, but when I looked around, all of them are in tears. And I said, oh my God. See, this is something that they are so special and they have that I seem to be lacking. Because just taking the name of the Lord in whatever tunes, whatever melodies, in whatever beat, rhythm, they are able to get tears of joy. And they asked me also to sing. I sang, and afterwards we began to speak about Swami. When I told them that, you know, I had got the chance to take Bhagwan's pictures, be a photographer around him taking pictures, and I showed them a few pictures, their tears increased suddenly and they were so thrilled. I was wondering what is it that I thought, you know, like the standard way when they get to know, oh, you stayed and took Swami's pictures. That is a kind of thrill. So I was about to frame a reply when they said, you know, this boy is so special because, see, when he takes Swami's photo, Swami comes in the photo. So when they said that, I was wondering, what are they talking about? I asked them that only. I said, what do you mean when you take Swami's photo, Swami's photo comes? Today, they said, don't you know? When you take Swami's photo, you either get Krishna or Rama or Dattatreya. And many times if you click Swami's photo, you get blank. Nothing comes. We have read so many stories like that. They said, but you are so blessed that when you're taking Swami's photo, you're getting Swami's photo. And you know, suddenly it was like a change in perspective for me. I always used to feel that if I click Swami's picture and instead of Swami, if there is Dattatreya there, it's a miracle for me. But these people had a totally different perspective. They said, you are creating miracle with every click of the camera because every time you shoot Swami, you're getting Swami only. You're not getting a blank. You're not getting anything else. You're not getting other. It is so rare. So, in my heart, I really thank them for that perspective. And I asked them, I said, have you seen Swami? Because I wanted to know whether they have an idea of how it is over here. They said, no. I said, not even once? No. None of them there had seen Swami physically even once. And yet, you know, they were speaking about Swami's stories and glories, like how we speak about Rama and Krishna not having seen him. And then I understood two things. One is the simplicity and beauty of their faith. And the second thing is that if we think that we have captured Swami's discourses or we have shot Swami's images or taken his video, we really have to be grateful to Swami for allowing us to actually document. Because as they said, how many are there such stories where people have clicked and got blank images? I think today also one such story will come up where unless Swami wills, a picture of his also doesn't appear on the in the camera. So it is really Swami's love that he has allowed us to document all this. With this we come back to, yes, you were speaking about the Gindi temple and the vibrant atmosphere there.
Right. No, before that, you know, just to go along with you in that digression, a couple of months back we were speaking to Prabhakar Rao, sir, you know, from the university.
Yes, in the Department of Mathematics.
Right. And you would be aware, you know, he used to be a videographer earlier.
Correct.
We have some of the wonderful footages which he has given us.
Correct.
From the late 80s.
Exactly. Yeah, right? He used to shoot on a VHS cassette.
Yeah, and he was saying that, you know, that point of time when Swami was giving the Bhagavad Gita series of discourses, he wanted to videograph the whole thing. So he went and asked Swami for the permission, and Swami said, why you want to take video and all that? You know, see, if you take a video, then you have to preserve the cassette. And that cassette, to play the cassette, you need a player, VCR player. And to see the thing, you need a TV. Instead of that, you just sit and capture whatever you see in your own mind.
Hmm.
And whenever you want to see, you just have to close your eyes and see the video.
Okay.
And you know how glad we are that Swami did not wish that for all the things which he did. Exactly. You know, he did permit, because you know, all said and done, it needs somebody to be very, very pure at heart to do that, to be able to sit and recollect. And or somebody like Tulsidas, who did not see Ramayana in person but could sit in meditation everything. And actually see what actually happened.
Dear Swami, that is our prayer, Swami, that as we do this satsang, as we relive the story, see the pictures and the text, read it out for ourselves and for everyone, please let these messages imprint themselves permanently in our heart, so that anytime we just close our eyes, we are able to see you and feel you.
After having made that prayer and really hoping that Swami blesses us with that, we spoke about Swami's first trip on a plane. You know, that was when Swami traveled to Hyderabad
from Bangalore,
when he went to stay with the family of the royal family of Chincholi. And then very shortly was the second trip on the plane, when Swami traveled to Madras.
From Hyderabad.
And that was on the 2nd of February, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah.
Because on 3rd of February was scheduled the inauguration of the Gindi Temple. And the specialty of the Gindi Temple, we've spoken of this before, but it's worth mentioning again. It's the first temple ever of Shirdi Baba to have an idol of Shirdi Baba. It happened to come even before the idol in Shirdi came up.
6 years before, actually. 5 years before. Right. I think it was in 1954 that the idol at Shirdi was made.
Okay, so that's a good 5 years before. So 1949, February 3rd is what we're talking about. And we've spoken about how Swami actually entered the life of Lokanath Mudaliar. And you know, it also brings that interesting thing.
Mr. Lokanath Mudaliar was the builder at
Right, actually the place, that land where this temple was built, belonged to Lokanath Mudaliar.
Mm-hmm.
And that land was the very reason through which Swami entered his life. Okay. And that land had been occupied by a tantric worshipper who was refusing to leave it. And you know, when Mudaliar tried to legally get him out, evacuated from that place, he left by cursing this Lokanath Mudaliar, saying that you'll become a madman.
Hmm.
And when you know, all the doctors were telling the only option is to admit him into an asylum, that's when Swami walks into his house and first comes in his dream, cures him.
Okay.
And the next morning, this man who was mad till the previous night wakes up and is normal.
Mm-hmm.
And just before the excitement can settle down in the family, just that morning a car drives by in front of their house and Swami walks in.
Wow.
Imagine, that's how they first see Swami. And you can imagine the thrill of Lokanath Mudaliar, the man who appeared in his dream and cured him, is just walking in beside his bed the next morning. And in gratitude, Mr. Mudaliar wanted to offer that land to Swami. And his initial idea was, he thought he'll build a house for Swami there.
Mm.
You know, so that when Swami comes to Madras, he can stay in that place. But then very miraculously, Swami later guided him to start a Shirdi temple, to start building a Shirdi temple there.
Okay, it's almost like the same.
It's almost like, yeah, that's what Swami said. You build a house for my previous incarnation. That's what Swami had told him.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, the way that thing came up and they started building, and one fine day a sculptor lands up in front of the house and he says that a stranger brought me here and said that you need some work to be done. So I'm a sculptor. So then he starts making the statue and the statue is installed. And so that's where we are now. Swami is there at Gindi to inaugurate this temple.
And, you know, in front of the Gindi temple, Shirdi Baba temple, there was also another little temple. There is, I mean, I have not seen it. I wish to see it when I go to Chennai next time. It is a Ganesha temple with a Ganesha idol. You know, Prem, this is one feature I have seen with almost all temples that Swami has made. Even in 2009, when Swami visited Harshi and Mumbai, in Harshi, Swami opened a Panduranga temple.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Jadav brothers wanted to make a temple for Swami, but Swami said no, the people in that land and that region, they love the form of the Lord as Panduranga.
Okay.
And therefore make it Panduranga Kshetra instead of Satya Sai Kshetra.
Oh.
And that is how it has been called, Sri Satya Sai Panduranga Kshetra.
Mm-hmm.
So even there, Swami has installed a temple. There are three temples. One is a Ganesha temple, the ground floor is a Shirdi Baba temple, and the main temple is the Panduranga temple. So there also Swami first inaugurated the Ganesha temple. So Ganesha, being the first Lord to be worshipped, has held his place, I think, forever. Whether it is bhajans, whether it is Veda chanting, whether it is establishment of a temple.
I think everywhere, you know, be it in Vrindavan, Even in the Ramesh Hall, we see that Ganesha Idol right in front.
Exactly.
We went to Mudanalli the other day and we saw that Ganesha Idol was installed by Swami. The temple was specially made and the location was fixed by Swami, and the wonderful stories we heard. So as you said, yeah, it's a you know, infallible pattern where Swami always installs a Ganesha Idol in places where he wants to leave his stamp.
And one interesting point about Ganesha, you know, Ganesha is called the Lord of Obstacles. Now, it is Swami again who has given a beautiful interpretation. We often think the Lord of Obstacles means the one who Vignaharta, that is the one who clears the obstacles. Just like an elephant marches through a jungle and all the plants give way and a path is created. But it was Swami who gave the other aspect of the same truth. That is, the Lord of Obstacles also means that Ganesha will, like an elephant, if he sits in the road, you know, it has happened once when we were traveling through Bandipur. An elephant comes on the road and just stands there. We just cannot do anything. Our vehicle could not progress any further. We had to patiently wait till the elephant walked away because, you know, honking or putting on the lights might anger and disturb the elephant and God knows what will happen to us. So we waited till the elephant moved off. So the elephant is also it can become an obstacle itself. So Swami said that Ganesha, the Lord of Obstacles, means that when you are on the right path, he will create a path for you and remove all the obstacles. But if it's a wrong path, he'll also put obstacles so that you don't take the path and go to the right path. So this is an interesting revelation that Swami did, and it's so beautiful about Ganesha as the Lord of Obstacles, and that is why he's the first one to be worshipped, the Prathama Pujita. Exactly what happened at Gindi also. Swami installed a Ganesha idol first, and then Swami materialized with a wave of his hand another Ganesha idol. And before installing the Ganesha idol, he had materialized 9 gemstones and he put it under the base of the idol. And even to this day, the Ganesha temple and the Ganesha idol are present and a definitely beautiful sight for all to see. It was after this that he went to the main sanctum of Shirdi Baba.
Right. And there again, Swami did similar things. Swami materialized, even before the statue could be placed on that pedestal, Swami materialized what he called, you know, tumme flowers. I think they're white, small flowers. But these were golden tumme flowers, you know, a set of ones. And Swami materialized it, put it in that. And Swami also, I think, materialized a copper plate. The, you know, what is usually placed under a statue that is
given to you.
Yeah, with some inscriptions.
Yeah, inscriptions
and, you know, markings.
I think these are all part of a ceremony called the Prana Pratishthapana.
Right.
Which means giving life to the idol. They say that after the Prana Pratishthapana ceremony, it is no longer a statue or an idol, but it is the living presence of the Lord.
Right. So that's what, and the beauty of this temple is that Swami himself did all these things. You know, Swami put those Navaratna, Swami materialized and put it in that pit, and Swami put these tumme flowers, golden ones, and then Swami put this copper plate with those divine inscriptions, and then Swami asked them to place that statue. And it's a very small statue. It's not like the statue in Shirdi or anything. It's a statue, I think, maybe 3 or 4 feet in height.
Okay.
Placed on a pedestal, which is again about 3 or 4 feet in
height.
There
are one or two pictures, I think. Swami holding the statue,
right,
and standing by,
yeah,
the
side. Yeah, and Swami has been to that place so many times after that. And
you know, in this, I forgot, there's one beautiful mention which has been recorded about how Swami did the actual Prana Pratishthapana.
Right.
Which is amazing in itself. You know, we spoke about this ceremony saying it is the life instilling ceremony. And Swami, after the idol had been placed, he walked to a little distance and then told everybody to look at the idol. And as everybody was looking at the idol, for a few moments, the idol, they say, levitated. It levitated and everybody present there witnessed it. They were so thrilled. There was nobody holding the idol. And yet it was suspended in thin air, in mid-air. And then it landed back firmly and it was fixed. And Swami was just smiling. And that was the life-instilling ceremony where people actually saw Shirdi Baba coming to life in that idol. And the idol levitating by itself before it got, before it was set in the stone there. And you know, reading this, as I was reading this last week, I was so thrilled, and that is what actually increased that ardor in me that I want to visit this temple and have a look at this idol, which is not an idol, which is Shirdi Baba.
Absolutely. And as I said, you know, you could really feel that. You can, because Swami has visited that place so many times. You know, there are so many occasions where Swami has gone into the Sanctum Sanctorum, and you know, there are pictures where Swami is covering the Shirdi Baba idol and standing right in front, as though like he is the one in the shrine. Of course, he is the one in the shrine.
And Swami proved this also, you know, because on the day of the inauguration, immediately after the inauguration, Swami went to the house of Mr. Mudaliar. And that was in Triplicane.
It was in Triplicane.
And when he went there, the daughter's name is Leela.
Yes.
Yeah. She reports that Swami suddenly went into a trance for 10 minutes and nobody knew what's happening. They just left him without disturbing him. He was just seated and he was in a trance. After 10 minutes, he comes out of the trance and he says, "Get a white cloth." And then he asks for a turmeric and sandal paste. And he tells them to apply it on the sole of his feet. Mm-hmm. What a blessing it will be, even as we imagine holding those tender feet and applying the turmeric and, you know, sandal paste. And after they had applied it, Swami pressed his feet onto that white cloth. And then they realized that Swami is giving them such a blessing, a boon. You know, they're going to be his footprints, which they can keep in the temple. The amazing thing was, after this was done, when Swami lifted his feet, those footprints were about seven, they were definitely looking like those of a person who is almost 7 feet tall. They didn't look like the footprints of a person who is 5 feet. You know, and it was, everybody knew that these are the footprints of Shirdi Baba and not of Swami. And I believe
actually
that
Swami himself said it.
Huh.
Swami said, when I inaugurated the temple of the old man, or the previous body.
Oh, Swami used to call him the old man.
Why should I give footprints of my body? And Swami said, that's why I've given you the footprints of his. And actually, you could see that, you know, as you said, it's a feet of somebody who is much taller and larger than the tender frame of Swami. And you could see the feet of an old man, because you could see that there are cracks in that impression also. And that impression of Shirdi Baba's feet is still framed and placed in that Gindi temple.
Wow, that is another reason all of us must visit that temple.
Right.
So many beautiful things to see. Just touching it, we'll feel such a thrill. And another thing is, Prem, again another little digression, but over the years, you know, all of us would have had some kind of cracks or, you know, problems with our feet. Swami's soles, oh my God, they were butter-like throughout his life. Whenever we have got the chance to touch, it has always remained like that. I mean, that in itself, I feel, is such a big miracle. I mean, every one of us gets cracked soles and we get so many other problems of the feet. And this is not of a person who, you know, always wore socks or kept indoors or had shoes, slippers.
Or never walked.
He has walked. I think Swami must have walked a 1,000,000 miles maybe or throughout his life, and he has walked on all kinds of surfaces: concrete, tar, thorny paths, muddy, sandy, and many places which are very cold, many places which are very hot, and almost 95% of the time without any footwear. And yet his feet remained so tender and pure, and I mean it's such a beautiful thing to just meditate on those feet.
And you know, even in that, Swami has such a beautiful lesson to teach us, because those boys who used to serve Swami inside, they have told that Swami used to take such care of his feet. You know, the way Swami used to cut the nails of his feet. And all through, what Swami used to say is, see, when I go out, people touch my feet. You know, it shouldn't hurt. If I have long nails, it'll hurt them. Mm. You know, that kind of a sensitivity, and that's what till the very end, even if, when, you know, Swami was not able to do it himself, he was very particular that his feet were taken care of very well.
In fact, I remember one doctor from the super speciality hospital narrating how once when, you know, he wanted to take Pad Namaskar, when Swami lifted his robe, he saw there were 3-4 scratches on Swami's feet on the top. And when he wondered, he later realized that some devotee in their excitement to take Namaskar would not have trimmed their nails, and that is how those few scratches came on Swami's feet. But you know, Swami said that should not happen to the devotees, and me, no problem. I can, you know, that is the love of Swami. Let anything happen to me, but nothing should happen to the devotee. Again, reminds us of that Anup Jalota song, you know, Prabal Prem Ke Pale Padkar. प्रभु को नियम बदलते देखा. एक्चुअली देयर ही स्पीक्स अबाउट अपना मान तले टल जाए पर भक्त का मान न टलते देखा. द लॉर्ड इज रेडी टू सैक्रीफाइस हिज ओन सेल्फ रिस्पेक्ट बट ही विल नॉट अलाउ द सेल्फ रिस्पेक्ट ऑफ अ डिवोटी टू बी टच्ड. द सेम थिंग होल्ड्स गुड इवन द फिजिकल रेल्म. ही वॉज रेडी टू टेक ऑन अ फ्यू स्क्रैचेस हियर एंड देयर in order to give the devotees the joy of Padnamskar. But he, as you said, he always made it a point to trim his nails extra deep, in fact, so that even by mistake, a devotee does not get even a scratch or a slight prick from the nails during Padnamskar.
Even as you are describing Swami's feet, I'm reminded of what Kasturi says about his first trip to, Prashantanilayam in his book, Loving God.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's around the same time, right? 1948.
Yeah.
End of 1948, he comes to Parthi with
Correct.
His wife.
Hmm.
And, he says that they just come into the old mandir, they've just put their hold alls and their, trunks in one corner. And suddenly Swami comes by and Swami sits on that rolled up bedding of theirs and starts talking to them. And here is Kasturi, he's still not, he has no idea what to make of this person in front of him. And, is he a saint? Is he a god? Or what is he? And a person who's so skeptic describes Swami.
Mm.
And he says, but the beauty is, something you cannot deny.
Mm.
And there, in the end, he says, from top to toe, he describes Swami, describes those curls. He says the nose is like it's been chiseled. It's so perfect.
Mm.
These eyes are, of course, the best part. And they seem to be doing something which you have no idea what it is
magnetic.
Doing. Mm. And then he describes the hair, describes Swami's, face and all that. And then he says that, then you finally come to the feet, something so tiny and tender, peeping out from behind those robes, silky
so
robes. And he says, almost like inviting you to come and, fall at it. And really that's...
Fondle them.
Really that's what is Swami's feet.
You were saying Kasturi was a critic. He was, he did not believe in these babas and all such thing. And he was critic when he came, and yet he was mesmerized by Swami's form. In fact, this mesmerism, has impacted so many people. We will be going into her stories in detail later on, but, Mrs. Kamala Sarathy from New Delhi, when she came to Parthi, she was also, not wanting to have anything to do with these babas and such things. She came because her daughter was a protege, a student of a great musician. Carnatic musician by name B.V. Lakshmanan, who was part of the B.V. Raman, B.V. Lakshmanan twins. We will speak about them very soon. So when she had come, when she saw, the one thing that struck her was, whatever may be about this Baba, she saw people crying as they left, telling Swami, we want to come back to you again, when will we come back? She saw them offering their best to Swami, things they would not offer maybe to their own children or to their own parents. She used to wonder, how is it that people are getting so attracted to a person who is not even related to them in any way? In fact, on one occasion when she was wondering like this, she records this story. She says that as she was wondering, how is it that people get so attracted? She had not yet surrendered to Swami. She had not yet become a devotee in quotes, as we call it. She was wondering why, how is it that people get so attracted? Even as she was wondering, she felt a gentle pat on her shoulder. And she looks back to see Swami standing there. And you know what Swami tells her? Swami addresses her by name and tells, Kamala, you're thinking along the right lines. Continue thinking like this and you will get the answer.
Yeah.
And Swami walks away.
Actually, a little more than that.
Uh-huh.
Actually, what happens is, she sees that and she sees all these people crying. And as you said, she's wondering what is the thing. And she just gets a fleeting idea. She says, huh. Is this divine love?
Ah, yes. Okay.
Is it Swami's divine love which is attracting? Because initially she thinks that, he's a miracle man and, that's how he's attracting. Then she says, no, it seems to be something more than miracles.
Mm.
Because you won't shed tears if you miss a person who is, who's attracting you only by his miracles.
Yeah, you may at best applaud
him. You might miss him and you might, feel dejected about, but would you cry bitterly like a child who is going away from the mother? And then she says that, it could only be divine love. And that's when Swami pats her on and says, Kamala Sarathy, you're thinking in the right lines. Continue to think like this.
What timing, right? What timing by the Lord. It's so beautiful. Yes, so let's go back to
Before
Gindi.
Before that, we were talking about Gindi and you mentioned about B.V. Lakshmanan. And this occasion when Swami came and inaugurated this Gindi temple was the moment when these two twins, B.V. Raman and B.V. Lakshmanan, legendary singers, actually really very popular singers in the Carnatic.
You can just Google them.
Yes, you can. And I mean, even as we were Googling, we just found out, you know, there is a very, very prestigious award which is named after B.V. Lakshmanan.
Exactly.
You know, it's very prestigious to receive that award. Now, that's what stalwart singers they were. And they were
B.V. Lakshmanan passed away in 1999 and B.V. Raman in 2006.
Right. Hmm. And these people came to that Gindi temple to give a performance.
The first ever time they were seeing Swami, and Swami had invited them
right.
to come and give a concert at the Gindi temple.
Right.
So dear listeners, we are in the middle of a riveting story. We will continue with Swami's life. We'll just take a little break. Enjoy this song. Is this the song that has been sung by...
Yeah, this is one song which was sung by B.V. Raman and B.V. Lakshmanan, the brothers. Raman brothers, maybe we could tell that.
We can call them B.V.
Brothers, okay.
Yeah.
But of course, this is unfortunately not that recording of the concert which they gave in front of Swami, either then or sometime later. We just hope that if there was somebody, some devotee there, if they've been there when they performed in front of Swami and they happen to have recorded it, we would love to have a copy of that, you know, rendition.
In fact, Swami told them, to sing the song Sadhinchane.
Right.
Samayaniki tagu matalaadu,
yes.
The song
and,
comes
and
to
the
that.
Beautiful thing is, most of the times when they sang, Swami sang with them.
Along
and
with them.
That was one more thing which actually really enthralled them because they've never seen somebody singing so well, some of the Tyagaraja Kirtanas, with such beautiful pronunciation of that Telugu, the chaste Telugu.
I think, Prem, in our database maybe we have one
we
or two
might have
of those
one
songs.
Or two when they performed in Venkatagiri.
Maybe in the next break that we take, we can find that and play that.
Right.
But right now, we will listen to one song.
A small recording of B.V. Raman and Lakshmanan.
Thank you.
So that, dear listeners, was just a sample of the B.V. Raman, B.V. Lakshman brothers. In fact, they were known for their pure form of singing, because there are a lot of Carnatic singers who have the tendency to mix styles, but they are known for their very chaste and pure form of singing.
They did no gimmicks in between.
Right. And, we spoke about Gindi temple and Swami asking a statue of Shirdi Baba to be installed. And last week we spoke about Chincholi, where Swami asked for the kamandalu and the
tanga.
The tanga which he used. And, in the process, Swami was very, very clearly establishing and, reaffirming that fact that he was the reincarnation of Shirdi. And, of course, even when we spoke about Swami's childhood, we spoke that, when people heard that Swami was claiming to be the avatar of Shirdi, now people say that Swami actually, rode on the popularity of Shirdi Baba. But actually, it's the other way around. Because if he really wanted popularity, he could have claimed to be the reincarnation of so many people,
exactly,
who were much more popular. But that was not to be, and Swami was...
Shirdi Baba was absolutely unknown in south of India.
Right. And, this was something which was happening for so many years in those initial 1940s, 50s, where Swami was establishing that connect between Shirdi and Parthi.
Interestingly, speaking about the connect between Shirdi and Parthi, I'm reminded of an incident that a close friend of her mother, of my mother, her name is Mrs. Sudha.
Mm-hmm.
And, after her marriage, she has changed her name to Serene. Serene auntie, that's how I call her. And she really lives up to her name. She's very serene. The interesting thing is, her grandmother had been to Shirdi Baba when she was a little girl. So when I got to know that, I was very thrilled. And I asked her, do you have any incidents that show that something that, maybe Shirdi Baba told your grandmother and Swami has said and something is matching? We are all always inquisitive about such things, right? She said, there is one story, after that, you will be left with no doubt about the unity of the two Babas. So I asked her to narrate it, and she said that when her grandmother had been to Shirdi, she was just in her teenage years, and Shirdi Baba had blessed her. He had blessed her and he had told her that you will have my darshan again in life. Have Shraddha and Saburi. And apparently he had given her a silver coin on one side of which there was Goddess Lakshmi.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what Shirdi Baba gave her. She understood the meaning of Shirdi Baba's statement, because within a year after that, before she could visit Shirdi for a second time, Shirdi Baba left his body in 1918. So, she began to think, how is this possible? Shirdi Baba told me that you will have my darshan again. How can I have his darshan when he has already left? But slowly, she began to accept the fact that Shirdi Baba is the Lord and there is nothing impossible for him. So, someday or the other, who knows, I might be able to see him. This went on, and that was so decades passed in this way as she was waiting. Then in the late 50s or 60s, something terrible afflicted her, because of which she lost her eyesight.
Okay.
And when she lost her eyesight, she really began to wonder, how is it, Swami, how is it, Baba, that I'm going to see you now? Even if you show yourself, I can't see you because now I don't have my eyes. It was during these years that she came to know that her granddaughter, that is Sudha, that is Serene aunty, is visiting some Sai Baba in South India who claims to be Shirdi Baba. Her curiosity was aroused. She was greatly intrigued. Sudha aunty had come to Swami and she played quite an important and active role. Not important, I mean active role. Active role during the inauguration of the Anandpur College, Anandpur okay. campus. So all that was there. It was sometime in 1973 that this granny asked her, can you take me to the Sai Baba that you go to?
1973, it's almost like 50 years after that.
Yes, 1980,
close to 50 years.
Yeah, 50 years. And she had, 50, 55 years. And
more than that, sorry, 60 years.
60
more.
Years, correct. 60 years, 60 years after that. And here was she asking her granddaughter, and Sudha aunty felt that, it's so tough. Puttaparthi was not the modern township that it is today. So she was wondering how will Granny stay there. And that too, she is blind. She needs help always. And whenever Sudhanti had been to Parthi before that, she had, as I said, she had been very active in so many activities. So she felt that she would get handicapped. So she kept postponing, telling some excuse or the other. And this Granny never got to visit Puttaparthi. In 1978, Baba visited Bombay. Swami visited Bombay, and that was the time Sudha aunty felt that her granny was in Bombay only. She felt that, you know, I can take her for darshan. So she had taken her for darshan, and in Dharmakshetra, in that sitting area, it was already jam-packed. Mm-hmm. You know, eking out some kindness from people because the granny was blind, she got her seated in some place. But even then what happened was, because the crowds were so huge and surging, if you go to Dharmakshetra, you will see it's a very, very small place. Mm-hmm. You will wonder how could people fit here. You know, it is not even 1/4 the size of Kulwant Hall. So the whole place got filled and people sat in front of her granny also. So the little path that existed there got blocked. From far, when Sudha aunty was seeing this, she wondered how is it that Swami can even go close to her because it's fully blocked. Anyway, she waited. Swami comes for darshan, and as he's walking, he walks up straight to the area where Granny is seated and then asks the ladies to make a path. And seeing this, Sudha aunty gets excited. She goes and sits next to her grandmother because she is seeing that Swami is coming straight towards her now. Swami is heading and coming straight to her, and then she's seeing her granny is in tears. Swami is standing right before her now, and the granny is in tears. And the granny turns and holds Sudha aunty's hand and tells her, "Are you seeing the beauty? How beautiful he is?" Sudha aunty is shocked. What is it? And then Swami just blesses the granny, turns and walks away. So Sudha aunty, you know, she's so thrilled. She sees and tells Granny, "Are you able to see me?" Granny says, "No." She says, "That means the blindness is not cured." Then she says, "Then what do you mean you said so beautiful?" She said, "Yeah. You know, his eyes are like this. He has got a curly mop of hair. He's wearing an orange robe. He's like this. He gave the smile. This is what he did. This is how he looked at me, and this is how he blessed me." Exactly, perfectly what had happened right in front of her. But before that moment, she is confirmed blind. And after it again, now she is confirmed blind. And then, you know, she says, "There's one more thing, Sudha, that I should tell you." The granny says, "In 1973, you remember 5 years back, I asked you to take me?" She says, "Yes." "You did not take me, but the day you left for Puttaparthi, I had a vision. And in the vision, I don't know who, a person came, blessed me and said that you don't worry, you will have darshan of your Baba." Mm-hmm. "This is what he promised me. Today when I saw Satya Sai Baba, I realized that the person who came in my vision and he are the same." Swami had already given her a vision 5 years back of him, and now she had the darshan and she said, "That's it, I know. I'm happy." And within a few months after that date, peacefully and blissfully, she gave up her body. This was the story of her granny, and Sudha aunty was asking me, "Do you need any more proof to show the unity between the two Babas?" It's so thrilling and so beautiful. No doubt in that there is no need for Swami to take the glory of Shirdi Baba or Swami to give glory to Shirdi Baba, because whether Shirdi Baba or Satya Sai Baba, they are actually the same.
I mean, really beautiful. It just inspires me to think that you don't need eyes to have darshan. You just need to have the heart.
And you spoke about surdas, right?
Right. You know, that's what it is. And we have seen. I've come across so many people who are blind who come for darshan. Really. Mm. And it's such a paradox. Blind people coming for darshan, and it, you know, wonder what each one of them have seen, and maybe they've seen more than us. In our stupidity, we think that we have the eyes and we've seen the darshan, and we have no clue what Swami has shown them.
Exactly.
And you know, that was also some of the things which happened in 1948, coming back to our discussion, because there were some people who came and, you know, in that sylvan setting of Puttaparthi, what it was then, they came and had visions which were, you know, which surprised everybody. You know, people were living with Swami in Old Mandir for a month and 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 2 months. But then they were having some of these people who came, stunned them with what they saw. because they are seeing something which is completely different from what they were seeing. And a couple of things which happened like that was, once two boys landed up in Prashanthi Nilayam, two college-going students, and they inquired where Swami was, and they somehow found Puttaparthi and they came there. And Swami sent word to them through Seshagiri Rao, you know, who was there then, the Pujari, saying that Swami is asking you to go to the Chitravati, have your bath and then come. Swami is saying that he'll meet you after that.
Mm.
And then there's a description which I really cannot understand what exactly it is. They say that they are guided by two tender feet which are wearing anklets to Chitravati, because they have no clue where exactly you go and have bath in that huge river. So they follow these two tender feet and they go there, and when they're having bath and they're washing their clothes, they actually have the vision of Panduranga coming and playing around in that water.
Wow.
Lord Panduranga. And they see that, and they again come back, they again, those two tender feet guide them back to, you know, where Swami was. And when they come there, they see Swami there in the mandir, and nobody knows what happened to these two little boys, and they just drop all their things. They run to Swami and they hug Swami. And they say, "You are Krishna, you are Krishna." And they say, "You thief." You know, you are hiding your real form from us. And they started, you know, hugging Swami, and immediately all the people in old mandir gathered around there, and they saw Swami and they saw these two boys. And Swami was struggling to get out of the grip because they were holding Swami so tightly. And then these two boys turned to all those people who had gathered and were seeing the sight. They said, don't be cheated. He is that Krishna. He is that Krishna. And Swami looked at the other devotees and said, you know, these boys are mad boys. Pichi pillalu, typically what Swami would have said.
That was a madness that...
Right. But the interesting thing was, just the day before, Swami had very casually remarked to the gathering there that tomorrow two Vedantins are coming.
Oh.
And you will see them.
Vedantins mean people who are greatly accomplished.
Right, spiritually accomplished. And Vedanta is supposed to be non-dualism, literally, in the true sense.
The distilled essence of all the scriptures.
Right. And this is what actually happened when those two real Vedantins actually came.
You know, this kind of madness for God. Swami says that of all the madnesses that afflict man, the least harmful and the most beneficial is God madness. And you said that, you know, everybody else would have thought that they are mad. Even Swami joined them and said that these two boys are mad. Swami has spoken about that also. He says that for a world intoxicated man, for a God intoxicated man, everything about the world seems mad. And for a world intoxicated man, everything about God seems mad. Taking these two statements of Swami together, it is almost like, not it's almost like, it is that everybody in the world is mad. Either they're mad after the world or they're mad after God. But among these two madnesses, it's better and it's the best to have madness for God, because that is the madness that will lead us to the truth. You were speaking about two boys. There's also a record of a lady who had similarly come, and, you know, she had seen her Krishna, and because of that, she runs to Swami's feet and collapses, and she's unconscious.
Krishna, talking of Krishna, we spoke of Krishna coming in the form of Panduranga to these boys. And the vision that lady gets is that of Yatiraja. What is this form described as the Yatiraja, which Andal is supposed to have worshipped?
Oh, okay. Oh, that is...
Yes, again, it is a form of Krishna.
Okay, Yatiraja.
Right there, Yatiraja.
Okay.
That's what she says. She sees...
Correct. I remember reading that Yatiraja, but I did not know what is Yatiraja.
Right, because she is a worshipper of Andal.
And Andal is, for the sake of our listeners?
Right. Andal is a devotee, a lady devotee of Krishna.
He's considered as one among the Nayanmars?
Not Nayanmars. The other, Nayanmars are Shaivite devotees.
Okay.
These are devotees of Vishnu.
Alvars,
yes.
So, Andal is an Alvar.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about Andal is, her worship is, she worships the Gopikas, actually. She says, "Oh Gopikas, you serve Krishna, I will serve you." You know, that's the worship she does. And all the verses she writes is actually to wake up the Gopikas and tell them that Krishna is waiting for you. Go.
There's,
you know,
a beautiful word, Dasanu Dasa,
right,
in Kannada, which says that it's out of ultimate devotion, you know, the devotee cries out saying that, "Lord, if I cannot be your servant, give me the chance to be the servant to your servant, so that indirectly I'll be serving you."
Right.
And Andal was one such
So she was in that, you know, lineage of people who are worshipping Andal. And actually she has the vision of Swami as that form which Andal worships.
Wow. And she, as I said, she falls unconscious. And when she comes back to consciousness, she again rushes to Swami, falls unconscious. This happens on 2-3 occasions, after which, you know, her husband is upset, you know, wondering what is this happening. What is his wife? She's so instable, unstable. I mean, she's not having even basic mental stability. She's creating a scene over here. It's so embarrassing. When he goes to tell her to, you know, in quotes, behave herself, Swami tells him, don't tell that to her. Hers is a kind of a Karana Janma, meaning that her birth is for a specific reason, and that reason will be soon attained. She will not live for more than 15 days. So, treat her well and let her accomplish the reason for her birth. And exactly as Swami says, without any reason, without any kind of illness or problem whatsoever, with a gentle smile playing on her lips, after 15 days, this lady gave up her body and without doubt merged with her Yati Raja Swami.
And you know, this is the thing which I was also mentioning before. What would have been playing in the minds of those people who heard Swami make such prophecies? You know, this person will die after 15 days, or you know, tomorrow these people are coming, or whatever Swami said. One thing is to have complete faith, and you know, as I said, you would think, yeah, Swami has told it will happen. But to have that trepidation, Swami said this, does it really happen? Does whatever Swami say really happen? Those people who were in that, let's say, quasi-faith, even they actually enjoyed the thrill of seeing Swami reveal himself. You know, though we now look at them and say that, no, he was skeptical and then he became a devotee. You know, he didn't have faith and then he got faith. But I think their process also was as beautiful as the process of all of us who are sitting here and listening about all these stories.
Exactly. We were speaking about, you know, people who came to Parthi in those days. And the twins too, whom we spoke about, that is B.V. Raman and B.V. Lakshmanan, they were also among those privileged few who visited Swami in 1949. In fact, after the inauguration of the Gindi temple on February 3rd, 1949, for Shivratri, these two twins landed up.
Right, Swami had invited them for Shivratri.
Shivratri.
Right.
And Swami had a very, very soft corner for them, people used to say, because whenever they were supposed to be arriving, nobody would know that they are coming to Puttaparthi. Swami would tell the cooks to have some special food made, kept aside, or ask them to cook late in the night so that warm food is available, there's hot water for washing and bathing. And when the twins arrived, they would be surprised with all the arrangements that Swami had made for them. They were very moved. In fact, B.V. Raman was the person who used to visit Swami more regularly because he stayed at Madras.
Madras.
B.V. Lakshmanan used to stay in Delhi, and that's how he came in touch with Mrs. Right. Kamala Sarathy.
He was actually staying in one of the rooms which were rented out in Kamala Sarathy's residence in Delhi.
Right. You know, just completing B.V. Raman's right. story, it is said that Swami learned Carnatic music.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the stanzas, many of the tunes, many of the things, Swami learned from these twins, especially B.V. Raman.
Okay.
And B.V. Raman was the person who composed the aarti that we know today. Om Jai Jagadisha Hare.
Okay.
He was the one. It actually happened in Venkatagiri.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm rushing the gun here, but I just could not contain myself, because this is the kind of introduction that I think these singers deserve.
Right.
People often adore them and speak about them in high notes about their Carnatic music and their accomplishments. But I'm sure if they are asked, because that is what they have taught all their disciples, if they are asked what was the highlight of their life, they are surely going to say Swami and Swami alone. Because all the disciples of, you know, almost all the disciples of Raman and Lakshmanan know about the great reverence they had for Swami. And many of the disciples, in fact, themselves have become staunch devotees of Swami. One example that comes to my mind is Mrs. Sudha Raghunathan.
Right.
And her miraculous story, which has resulted in a name in the Satisai Ashtotram. Om Shri Sai Jodi Adipalli Somapaya Namaha. But that comes in our timeline in 1959, and we shall take that up later. But that was the caliber of people who were drawn to Swami. It is not just that Swami was fooling people, and the simple-minded folk, village people who had nothing, were drawn and enamored to Swami. Intellectuals, musicians, kings, rulers, people who were at the zenith of whatever they were doing, were attracted, you know, Kasturi, another person, were attracted to Swami with a mysterious kind of force which they themselves could not understand, but they had to accept, and later on they expressed their deepest sense of gratitude for that attraction because it gave them the greatest treasure of their lives.
And that was the characteristic of Swami, because even as we are narrating stories of Swami traveling and staying in the house of royalties, and Swami's interacting with intellectuals and talented individuals, you know, side by side we are also reading stories of how Swami spoke to those tribal villagers who came to him in those early years, and how he, you know, as much as he moved with the city folk, he also moved with them, and how we spoke of how Swami performed, you know, during the wedding at Kuppam. And Swami, in fact, arranged for the house which was to host that wedding of Vijay Kumari, and all these things. You could only say that, of course, it doesn't seem to be the right way to describe Swami, but Swami was very well grounded.
Exactly.
But, you know, that's the beauty, because these people, I'm sure, even in 1940s, B.V. Raman and B.V. Lakshmanan would have been a force to reckon. You know, they would have been very popular, because they were themselves students of one of the greatest Carnatic singers of that time.
Yes, I remember. He is the legendary Tiger Varadacharyar.
Right. He is supposed to be a very, very popular Carnatic singer.
Dear listeners, you can again, you know, Google this and see there's a Wikipedia page on Tiger Varadacharyar. And he was the principal in Madras Music Academy. And he was the one who spotted these twins. And he gave them all the patronage and support. And of course, it's legends who foster legends, it looks like, because that legend, when he fostered them, you know, Tiger Varadacharyar, they say that he didn't have a great voice.
Okay.
But, means in the sense, tonal quality of his voice was not good at all. But his sheer mastery over the music used to just floor people and keep them spellbound, even though he used to sing for hours. So, you know, they say that there has to be, you know, that drushti bottu that we say. In order to ensure that if something is very perfect, people may feel jealous. So therefore, even for babies, you know, in India, they keep a small black spot on the cheek, because right. The baby is so beautiful, people should not feel that it is so perfect and feel jealous. Therefore, put a black mark. It looks like that drushti bottu that God selected for Tiger Varadacharyar was his bad voice. Imagine a singer with a bad voice, yet he's a maestro who has become a legend and who trained people who became legends. So B.V. Raman and Lakshmanan were his proteges, and of course, yeah, they found their fulfillment in Swami.
And later, for many occasions, of course, they used to return to Puttaparthi very often, and you said about how they were warm hospitality was waiting for them every time they visited. But I think the major part of their joy of singing for Swami was in Venkatagiri, which we will come to shortly. Because that happens in 1950s.
Actually, it happens in the middle of 1949 itself.
Right.
In June, July 1949, you know, I was speaking to a member who wishes to be anonymous of the Venkatagiri family.
Okay.
And he has very graciously got himself interviewed also. He just says that, as long as I'm alive, please don't broadcast this.
Okay.
But I have told him that anonymously a few things I will quote. And he said that the Raja of Venkatagiri actually wanted to meet Swami. He had heard so much about it, and see, one more royal family now actually getting pulled in. He wanted to meet Swami. On the first two or three occasions when he came to meet Swami, Swami left without granting an audience to the king and queen. Just imagine, that was, who would do that, or why would anyone do that? Yet it must be said to the Raja's credit that he persisted. And again, it was sometime in the middle of 1949, I think July 1949, that at Sakamma's home, that the royal family of Venkatagiri had their first darshan of Swami.
Let me endeavor to get his full name
to
our listeners. His name was Velugoti Sarvagna Kumara Krishna Yachendra.
Who came first? But I think the king's name is... came in June.
That is July... this is the king of Venkatagiri.
Okay. Sarvagya Kumar.
Yeah, is actually, it was not he who came first. He was brought by his brother, is it? Brother or
yeah.
I think, nephew or brother, cousin or brother.
We shall retain that for, as we said, next episode, because Venkatagiri is a huge chunk, and wow, those stories are again divine. Coming back to the visit at Parthi, during Shivratri in 1949, that was I think in the March of 1949, Swami did Abhishekam with milk to the idol of Shirdi Baba. So it started then. After that we have seen, you know, Sai Blossom has released this beautiful documentary on Mahashivratri.
Right.
In that we can see that Abhisheka, how it evolved. What started off as Swami pouring milk on Shirdi Baba idol, later transformed into that unforgettable Vibhuti Abhishekam. It's so magical. You just have to view it in the DVD for about 4 to 5 minutes, you know. You can see Kasturi or Karunyananda holding the pot on top of the silver idol of Shirdi Baba, and Swami thrusts his hand inside. And as he is twirling his hand, Vibhuti is pouring down copiously. And Swami pulls out his hand, the Vibhuti flow stops. Swami puts in the other hand, again it begins. It's so magical, and the starting of such an Abhishekam was in 1949 when Swami would do milk Abhishekam to the idol of Shirdi Baba. After that, Swami would do the Lingodbhavam sometime almost at midnight. This would be when these lingams or representation of Lord Shiva or the infinite one would come from Swami's stomach through his throat. Swami's temperature would often soar to as high as 104 or 105 degrees. After which, you know, Swami kept this lingam in 1949 on the Shirdi Baba idols and then did the Abhishekam. After that, Swami personally distributed the Tirtham, the holy water and the milk, as well as prasadam to all the devotees who had assembled there. After which a procession began. They say that, you know, the procession began at something like 2 o'clock in the morning and concluded in the early hours of the morning. After which bhajans would begin. Non-stop bhajans.
Mm-hmm.
For almost 12 hours, sometimes 24 hours. It was not a fixed thing those days. So it was quite a hectic schedule those days. But filled with great joy, because Swami would be part and parcel physically of each and everything that happened.
Right. This was the 1949 Shivratri, and as we said,
meanwhile the construction was progressing.
Construction was progressing, and a couple of interesting things happened there. You know, now when we talk of Swami's super speciality hospital being constructed, and we talk about the indoor stadium being constructed in record time, a record not only for Parthi, it's a record for the construction company itself, which is a global conglomerate.
That's what L&T Ramakrishna sir said.
L&T Ramakrishna sir says, going back to the building of the Prashanthi Nilayam, but back in those days, it was not the case, because you can imagine what Puttaparthi was in 1940s, and to build a structure, I think that would have been the biggest structure for at least a radius of 30-40 kilometers then.
And for another 10 years after it was built, I think it would have remained as the biggest structure.
Biggest structure, right. And, you know, understandably, there was some paucity in the funds of making, to get that building construction done. And those devotees who were there in those initial days, we spoke of how Sakamma gave the land, and Tirumal Rao was another person who was, you know, actively coordinating the things. Not only they wanted to build a mandir for Swami, but they were actually trying to get the best and do the best possible. You know, we spoke of how the wood came from somewhere, and the frames came from somewhere, and the roofing came from somewhere. Because thanks to them, they had the vision that this is not going to be a building which is going to last for a few decades or something like that. You know, even today we can walk into Kulunthal and we can see what a strong structure that is. And it is quite understandable that it took them so much time to build it.
In fact, the Kulwant Hall that has been built much later, I think the whole thing was done in 1996 or 97. This was built in 1950. You know, in the Kulwant Hall structure, we have had a few problems of water leakage,
right,
and such things.
During the rains.
Nothing of that sort in the Bhajan Hall Mandir, which was built in 1950.
You know, that really explains of
the construction.
The construction and, you know, what effort they've taken to make it perfect.
And their efforts were marvelous in many ways, you know, because as we said, there was a paucity of funds. the devotees began to write dramas and stories. You know, it's almost like the devotee taking on what the Lord used to do. Swami used to write the plays. So now they began to write plays and they used to enact the plays. And the ticket money collection for this place, they would pool into and put it into the construction of the Prashanthi Nilayam. On one occasion, they say that, you know, they had gathered 1,000 rupees, which was a very huge sum in those days. So 1,000 rupees had been gathered, and this was the way they began to put in their might. And, you know, they say that, do your best, God will do the rest. Swami too did help in ways that are beyond human comprehension. At one point in time, they were wondering how on earth will they be able to lift, get girders and other things to construct the mandir itself. And if we read Satyam Shivam Sundaram, we get to know how a crane that was actually traveling on the way, it just gets stuck at the deviation junction towards Puttaparthi.
Mm-hmm.
It's just stuck and it refuses to move. And those people get to come to know that there's a Baba living nearby who does miracles. And when they come, Swami says, yes, but please get it over here. He materializes Vibhuti and gives it to them and says, you put this on your engine, it'll start. Please, we need these girders to be transported, transport it here. So that's how the crane got the girders and deposited them. The crane also had the power to go across the sandy bed of River Chitravati, which no other vehicle could have done. And it transported the girders and left. Then the next problem came as to how on earth are we going to raise these girders and put it on the roof, because they are so heavy. The crane was the one that lifted them. Again Swami smiled, and this time the vibhuti was given to the workers and people working there. Swami himself went touching the girders, and everybody chanting the name of Sai Ram, they lifted, and it was done through sheer manual labor, human effort of these workers, of course aided by divine will. I'm sure Swami must have been smiling throughout as this miracle happened in real time and the mandir was getting constructed.
And that's a pattern which you would see always, you know. Swami could make a crane which is traveling so many miles away to stop and to be brought here. You know, couldn't he have done the whole work that the crane could do himself?
Exactly.
But that's what Swami does, you know. He doesn't complete our task. He empowers us to complete our task.
Mm-hmm.
And he just gives us that ability, and that's the beauty of living with Swami. And
that allows us also to enjoy
right,
the thrill.
That's the thing, you know, to be a part of that mission. And all said and done, we have our little egos, and that feeling that I've also contributed and I've also done my bit. And I think that's what Swami is blessing us with. And as Arvind, you and myself sit here and think that even we speak about Swami, and even we have taken Swami's name to the people who like to listen to him, you know, as silly as we are.
Really, on deeper introspection, we realize that it is only an opportunity. It's always an opportunity. It is never that Swami needs anybody. Swami needs nobody, and everybody needs Swami. Everybody loves Swami. Everybody needs Swami. And everybody gets Swami because Swami has put the easiest rule, if you can say so. You know, Krishna said, Ananya Chintayantoma Yejana Paryupasate Tesha Mityabhyuktana. One who thinks of me without any other thought, I will give myself to them. But Swami has said, if you need me, you deserve me. That's it. So the only qualification we need to get Swami is to just need him. And dear Swami, on behalf of all our listeners, on behalf of all of us, I definitely would like to humbly submit at your lotus feet that we always need you, and we shall forever need you, because life finds meaning only with you.
Dear listeners, that brings us to the end of this session of Afternoon Satsang. But we spoke about Shivratri of 1949. We have spoken about festivals in the 40s. Sadly, we cannot bring you images of those beautiful festivals. But there are a few festivals that Swami has permitted us to capture. And one such festival, grand festival, is the 1975 Golden Jubilee celebrations, the 50th birthday celebrations. And we are so happy that we are able to bring out a version of that festivity, a week-long festivity, if I'm right, Arvind.
Exactly, and a small clip of that was played in Kulwant Hall and worldwide via Radio Sai on Swami's birthday, 23rd November.
Right.
And that clip has been uploaded, and I mean, a lot of people, we can see the views being generated, naturally so, because so beautiful. Within a fortnight, I am sure we will be getting the original Sai Blossom product, which will be, you know, the beauty of this product, the beauty of this whole celebration, this documentary, is at the end of the documentary, when you see how long it is 108 minutes long.
Oh, beautiful.
Such a beautiful number, and that's almost 2 hours. 2 hours of this divine bliss. So dear listeners, we take this opportunity to make you aware that within a fortnight, we will be having this in our Sai Blossom stores. Don't forget to pick up your copy or order it via products@radiosai.org. You can mail, you can send in your emails to products@radiosai.org, or is it @saiblossom.org? products@radiosai.org. Yes, you can send in your mails to that. We will update you via the Radio Sai Facebook page when this product arrives. Meanwhile, you can enjoy it on the YouTube. It has been uploaded as the 50th birthday celebrations by the Radio Sai channel. Enjoy those 8 minutes. And it's 2 o'clock in our studios. Brother Chandu is here for his Love to Love segment. We will leave you with this little song, after which you will be able to enjoy that musical offering that he has got ready for all of you. Thank you. Jai Sai Ram.
राधे श्याम राधे श्याम राधे श्याम राधे श्याम राधा रमण श्रीरंगा मुकुंदा राधा रमण श्रीरंगा
राधे श्याम राधे श्याम राधे श्याम राधे श्याम राधा रमण श्रीरंगा मुकुंदा राधा रमण
राधे श्याम राधे श्याम राधे श्याम राधे श्याम राधा रमण श्रीरंगा मुकुंदा राधा रमण श्रीरंगा
राधे श्याम राधे श्याम राधे श्याम राधे श्याम राधा रमण श्रीरंगा मुकुंदा राधा रमण श्रीरंगा
जय यदुनंदन परम निरंजन
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 जय यदुनंदन परम निरंजन